for those looking to live outside the box of religious performance and inside the love of an awesome Father, this is The God Journey. Well, my name is Wayne Jacobson, and we're back for another edition of The God Journey. Brad's not here. He's out running around the country somewhere. But I've invited a friend that has become a friend mostly through email, though we did meet a couple of years ago. I'm talking with Don Zimmerman from Phoenix, Arizona, or do you live in a suburb near there?
North Phoenix.
North Phoenix.
Inside the city limits.
Close enough. And Don, you and I have been in touch for 2 or 3 years. I don't even know how long, but...
Probably closer to 5, but that's okay.
Wow. See how time flies when you're having fun, I guess. But I don't know if you've been listening to recent podcasts. You wrote me this wonderful letter, and the first part of it, this is a few weeks ago, actually, said, I stopped listening to the podcast every chance I got. Fact is, I haven't listened to one for quite a while. It's not that I'm not interested. I am. I enjoy your thoughts on the journey, but I don't need to hear your thoughts anymore. I'm hearing straight from the Father on everything I need right now. And I just think that's one of the best letters I get from people that go, you know what? I found my way into a journey. I think when Brad and I started the podcast, our hope was that our conversation would stimulate other people's conversations with each other, and more importantly, their conversation with God in a way that maybe the God journey becomes irrelevant to them. So we consider that a success story when we get an email like that.
Well, I don't think I would make you irrelevant because you played a very important part in confirming what I knew in my heart to be true, but no one else was telling me. That's odd since I've been a pastor for 45 years.
Now you have
all the degrees and everything else.
Yeah, you've outed yourself now. You've had a little playful banter on the blogs these days about the difference between a schlub and a non-schlub. And people are saying we don't have enough schlubs on the podcast. And by schlubs, they mean non-religious professionals. Never were, never will be, aren't now. So now you're not a schlub. You're a former pastor.
No, I'm actually still a pastor.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, we're just, we have an interesting journey. When we came to the church 35 years ago, it was in Central Phoenix. It became a inner city church. My intention was to move it out. The Lord said, no, hold on to the buildings and leave them for the next generation of ethnic believers. And we have a ethnic congregation that is starting there.
Wow.
And it's our intention in the next few years to turn everything over to them lock, stock, and barrel.
Wow. And what was the brand name of your particular group that you were part of?
We were Baptist.
You were Baptist, okay.
And I've learned you can be forgiven of that.
Yes, you can.
It is wonderful to be forgiven because as a Baptist, I couldn't talk to people. But just as a believer, I can love people wherever I find them and no one cares.
What do you mean you couldn't talk to people? What do you mean by that?
Well, because you're a Baptist. Baptists have to promote Baptist, and it's class warfare.
Wow, I grew up Baptist, and we weren't that limited. I had Lutheran friends and Methodist friends and atheist friends.
You weren't a very good Baptist.
Maybe I was a different kind of Baptist. There are different varieties, you know. But
yeah.
So pretty conservative bunch then, I would gather.
Oh, yes. Yes, we were sure about everything, and we were sure that if you weren't just like us, you probably weren't real sure.
Well, you may still be pastoring these days, whatever that means, but you also have other stuff that you're involved in vocationally, do you not?
Yes, I am working in the RV industry. I'm trying to work my way out of a job as Lord sees fit. Most people wouldn't call what we have a church because the name it's a fellowship. The services, although we do have a building because it's bought and paid for, it's most convenient for us. But we're much more relational and conversational in the sermons. So it's not like the setting you would be used to in a normal church.
Right. But you guys get together every week?
We do. But oddly enough, I encourage the people, before you come to church, you ask the Lord, is this where you should be today? And if he gives you a different answer, go there and do that.
Wow. And are people doing that?
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Very successfully.
And it's changed the dynamics of your group together, hasn't it? I mean, you've started this journey. I mean, you were more traditionally fitting into the commonality of that, 5 years ago or longer?
Yeah. What happened, I was trying to ask the Lord, why aren't Christians acting like Christians? Why isn't this working out very well across the board? So I spent 6 years ago a whole summer in prayer, sometimes all night in prayer, just begging God to show me what was going on. And I was reading Andrew Murray as My Utmost for His Highest at the time. From there, I thought, well, who did Andrew Murray learn from? And I saw that he learned from Andrew Law, or William Law, and that Boehme was the first Protestant Christian writer. Brilliant man, but he was a shoemaker. And he just asked God, what's everything all about? And God spoke to him. It took him 30 years to write down what God told him in 15 minutes. But we both came to the same conclusion. And one of the things that was on Boehme's heart back in 1625 was the state of the church. He said, we have missed the point. The point was not to get in the ritual that we've got into, but into a relationship with Jesus. And as I began to contemplate that, then we came across Brennan Manning's Ragamuffin Gospel and, of course, your three books. And it just began to open up. The church is headed in the wrong direction institutionally. We mean well, but we're not teaching people to be dependent upon God. We're teaching people to be dependent upon a system or a person. And that was the background to the letter. When I first started talking with you, I was looking probably more for somebody to agree with me, to see where that had been where I was going. And now I don't need that anymore because the Lord can tell me everything I need to know. It's nice to hear the agreement, but I know that He's there. And it's much more relational than it has ever been in my life. And I'm seeing that in the body of believers that we have where they don't even ask me questions anymore from a counseling standpoint. It's kind of a joke. Don't bother to ask him because he's just going to ask you, what did Jesus tell you to do?
Yeah.
And I said, I'll be glad to discuss with you what you believe Jesus told you to do, but I don't have any offering for you on my own.
Hmm.
You know, you get your answer from him. And since that time, and that's been several years, I don't have much discussions. Because once Jesus has told them to do it, He empowers them to do it, and I'm not necessary.
But this is quite a process, isn't it? It didn't go from one day not hearing nothing to this, what you talk more relational communion between you and the Father. Do you find this more to be a process of months or years where you kind of became more comfortable listening to God than before, or not?
No, it's been years. It was not instantaneous. It goes so against the grain of what we're normally taught. When I was in working on my doctorate, we went back to a seminary level, and I was teaching some of the seminary students on home Bible studies, and they basically were offended that, well, what do they need us for if you're just going to turn people loose with the Bible? And I find that to be pretty predominant in the attitude of most ministers, that I will interpret the Word of God for you, and I'd much rather tell me what you believe Jesus said, and we can decide if look at the scripture together, but only after you know what He's told you.
Yeah.
And you know what? When they ask Jesus first, very seldom do they get it wrong.
Is that right?
I hear some of the most profound thoughts coming from some of the, quote, simplest people that Jesus has spoken to their heart, and it plays out in their actions. They're able to honestly love people and to put their swords down and quit slashing at everybody.
Wow. And this is, I mean, this is real different from where you were at, say, 5-6 years ago, in terms of the way you relate to these people.
Oh, yeah. But in the world that I work in RVs, I very often will work in a woman's only park. And they will always open the conversation of, how did you get into cleaning these tanks? And so I tell them, I've been a career pastor for 42 years, and that kind of opens their eyes. And they're expecting me to lecture them. And I won't, and I don't. I said it makes it. I tell them honestly, I would rather spend a day with you in this park than in most religious groups that I know, because I find more love going on here in an honest way than I do in most Christian groups. And they are just surprised at that. But I went back to Romans chapter 1, and Romans 1 wasn't a condemnation of their lifestyle, it was a condemnation of the fact that they rejected God. The only way to bring them back into a different kind of lifestyle is to show them that God does love them just as they are. And when they begin to believe that God really loves them, then if he wants to bring about change in their life, he can do it from that basis. But until they are sure that he loves them as people, it's not going to work. I get along extremely well in the gay community. I used to be very hesitant about them. I can tell you the truth. I honestly love them. They are some wonderful people who have been tremendously hurt. And I feel their pain. And I just want to show them that Jesus loves them. And some of them even donate to my church because they said, we need your message out there.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting thing because I don't think most people really, at least in the religious orientation, that in fact, until you know you're loved, you can't change the way you're living. Or if you do, it'll just be a cosmetic external thing and won't make a profound bit of difference. And I still think, particularly whether it's the gay community or adulterers, I mean, we always sin as sexual sin seems to always be the big one that really gets the religious folks going. But it's really true about anything. Until you know you're loved, any external change is just cosmetic, and it's not even going to be, it's not going to endure the test of time. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, I was raised being taught that the Bible is a book about sin. And after having studied it for 45 years, I've come to the conclusion, the Bible is a book about forgiveness. Jesus says a lot more about forgiveness and wanting to forgive us. And hey, I've taken care of all that on the cross for you. Let's move on to how much I love you. You already know what your sin is.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody said, we already know about our sin. It's grace we don't understand. And I think that's so true of so many of our lives. We've read a couple of your letters before when you talk about being in mobile home parks and RVs and working on tanks. You actually clean out toilet systems on RV parks as your little job, little niche job here, huh?
Well, I have found a way to do that that the world says, the RV Association says is impossible to do what I do. And I videotape that I can do it any day of the week because I've perfected the equipment. And I also found something else that the rest of them don't know, that we're putting the exact wrong things, wrong chemicals in the tank. The chemicals that the industry provides are ruining the tanks.
Wow.
Weird, but it's true, and I can prove it.
Well, that's like in sell you new tanks, I guess, huh?
Well, I'm not doing new tanks. That's only made by one company here, and it's a probiotic. It's all natural, and it actually works, and we're working on licensing that now.
One of the things you said to me at some point, you were maybe even franchising this to go beyond the area that you work in. Is that still
or yes.
expanding?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to teach anybody that wants to how to clean a tank. But the real need in the industry is both the cleaning and putting stuff in that doesn't harm the tanks. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah. So you went from, you know, pastoring and being in an office all week, air conditioned, all that stuff, to cleaning out toilets, basically, for people.
Yep.
And, man, most people wouldn't make that jump in a million years. I mean, I talk to a lot of pastors who say, I know this isn't working. I'd love to live like you live, but I don't know how to get there and pay the bills. So I'm going to make the best of a bad situation. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that sentiment expressed by pastors who are pretty sick of the rat race themselves, but don't know how God provides beyond the salary they're getting from a board.
Yeah, it is a strange journey to me, too. Sometimes I sit out there, you know, because literally the soles of my shoes melt off every summer. It's so hot here. I could collect Social Security right now, but I don't have enough in Social Security to collect anything.
A couple of things when I hear you talk, how counterintuitive this seems to be. One, I hear a lot of pastors say, I don't have anything marketable to do with my skills if I left pastoring. I've got a Bible degree or I've got whatever. I have found the world, and then hopefully you're going to find your way back home, even out of great pain, that life has a way of setting up a set of consequences for bad behavior that eventually is going to at least make the opportunity for you to come back something more real.
See, isn't that a terrifying thing that God would actually, well, there you go.
Here, take the check.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think he's got to know you're headed for a pig pen. Trucks and the religious answers, and they're trying to be condemned by religious people. But there's a lot of interest in who is this God and how can I know him? That's a conversation I find almost everybody wants to have.
If you drop, I want you to come to my church from the conversation and we just talk about Jesus, it works beautifully.
Yeah, it's the baggage that people are afraid of what else you're carrying that I'm not interested in. I've been there, done that, or at least heard enough horror stories. I'm interested in going back. But it's interesting to find that there are people that are very interested in the very things that we would say they're not interested in because they've been turned off by our religious stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I've spent sometimes an hour or two after a job is done, because people will ask me, why are you so sure about what you're, you know, what you believe? And we'll sit there and talk about it. And they're very open. And I have moved away from the fact that I have to convince you of anything. I'm not going to convince you of anything. I'll share with you what I believe, why I believe it, how I came to believe it, and I'll accept where you are as you are. And the conversations continue on.
Well, let's talk about the earliest stages of this transforming for you, Don, if we can, because I was in on some of those early emails from you and the eyes opening in various ways. But can you remember, I mean, now we're getting a good contrast between what it was like before and what it's like for you now. Can you go back and flesh out some of those transitional days and even some of the pains, concerns, things you couldn't see clearly? Are those still in your mind? Do you still remember that?
Oh, yeah. I remember where it was, but it is a fading memory. Hmm. It began with the frustration of, the ministry isn't doing what it's supposed to be doing. You know, the Christianity across the board is not really changing lives. It becomes something totally different than what I believe Jesus wanted it to be. And there were some, we call them the grace wars in our church, where I wanted to preach grace and other people wanted to lay down the law. And it ended up in a massive split. And the older group basically, well, they didn't basically, just flat out said, well, then these younger people can pay for all of this. When the fact of the matter was, younger wow. people already were paying for it.
Wow.
They just got in my face with it and just, they walked out en masse. And so it was, well, we're going to die. But we didn't. We began to live at that point when we were free to follow the, it was ugly. It was very, very hurtful. It was very, very personal. I have never been as attacked in the world, the business world, as I was in the church. Nothing in the business world has ever been personal. You either do the job or you don't. In the church, it's you have to do the job to their expectations without ever knowing exactly what their expectations are.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking about someone just today about the fine line between we love you, we affirm you, you're great, we love you to be around, cross one line, and all of a sudden you're almost the Antichrist, and we've got to pound you and destroy your reputation and just go after you as if there's no concern about you as a person at all. It's just a conformity kind of get in line or we'll eat you up.
Well, it was to the degree that one of the head elders, the Lord had spoke to my heart about changing the name of the church, taking the name Baptist out of the church, and the local area identifier, which I won't say at the moment because I don't want to embarrass anybody.
Sure.
But we had a meeting, and the head elder stood up and said, well, it was the church. The Bible was written to the church of Pergamos, the church of Laodicea, the church at. Therefore, it is very clear that it has to be Phoenix Baptist Church. Not exactly Phoenix, but.
Right.
And I said, how did you get to that from there? And all the old heads said, yes, it has to be that. Scripture is plain on it. And the younger group said, whoa, this is not right. I mean, you can't make those kind of stretches. And that just kind of unveiled everything. That this isn't about what the Lord wants. It's about what a group of people want for whatever reason they want it. Oh, and they were, of course, it was a congregational church by congregational government, unless, of course, they get outvoted and then they throw a fit.
Majority's only great when it's majority rule is only great when I'm in the majority.
When I'm not, yeah. Or when I can lead the majority, but when the majority wouldn't follow them.
Yeah.
But what helped me through that probably more than anything was something that happened 30 years ago as the Lord works. When I first came to the church in the late 70s, I had a church consultant from Fuller Seminary come in, and he studied the church and he told me, you're going to have to wait 15 to 20 years till the majority of this group is gone or died before you can make the changes that need to be made here. Because if you try and do anything else, they will fire you. Wow. It took 25 years. Wow. His last words to me, you have to outlive them till you can outvote them.
Wow.
And so I prayed like crazy it would not be that way. But he was absolutely right. It came down to a final vote.
And you had that patience to hang in there 25 years and love these people?
I love them deeply. I still do. I'm sorry that they couldn't come where I was being sent. It's not a matter of patience. It's a matter of when you're told to do something and you know you're told to do it, you do it. Yeah. And that's what the Lord instructed me to do.
Yeah.
In the middle of that, I had an offer from a church to go to Bakersfield that had its own oil well on the property. Money wasn't a problem. And I had to walk away. I said, yeah, this is, I mean, it's a fantastic officer. You're a great place, but the Lord has made me an assignment that I have not completed yet.
Yeah. And some of this for you, I mean, kind of stepping aside from the vocational role of a pastor. Can I say it that way? I'm trying to find the language that would work for you.
Totally. I'm as non-pastor as a person could be.
So you, when you step away, did you do that because there was no money, because God called you to do something else vocationally, so there's not that dependence? What drove that?
The money went down. This church still supports me some.
Yeah.
But they cut the salary in half. They took away my my housing allowance. They took away my insurance. They took away my
Taking away sounds aggressive. Was this part of the conflict? That
no, it wasn't.
It just they didn't have the money.
The reality, and a lot of the kids that the people that came to me were my own children and said, "Dad, we don't have the money in the budget anymore." I said, "Cut everything you have. Don't worry about it."
Yeah.
Just we'll let the Lord take care of it, and you do what the Lord allows us to do, and He'll take care of the rest.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned your family. Has this been easy, this transition on your wife, your kids? How's that played out?
Split down the middle.
Okay.
My wife it's been very, very hard on her.
Yeah.
She very, very much liked that old group. My wife is, if there is a natural-born legalist, it's my wife. She will not break a rule. If you tell her it's a rule, she will not break it.
Wow.
She is an incredible woman.
And she's okay with you talking this way on the podcast, right? We're not outing her anyway.
I said that in church.
Pardon?
I've said that in church.
Yeah,
she knows that.
Yeah.
And everybody, my wife's reputation is such that you could not harm it. If I said anything negative about my wife, anybody who knows her would think I'm crazy, not her.
Yeah, I've got that same problem.
Yeah. And so I don't worry about damaging her reputation because it is spotless. But she is very slow to change. And she agrees with everything around it. It's the emotional side of it that hurts her the most.
Sure.
Because she still to this day grieves over the friends that we said, "Don, we were with those people for 25 years. Yeah, I know. But they couldn't go where I'm going.
And the friendships didn't survive the lack of church involvement together?
No, not at all.
I find that sad, don't you?
Oh, I do.
Even if we can't agree on what we're going to do together, can the friendships, and in conformity-based environment, they really can't. You can't be my friend if you're not doing what I want you to do.
Well, I think it's a little deeper than that in this situation.
Okay.
I think they're honestly afraid that they're going to get in trouble with God if they do something different than they've always done. Because it's a very fear-based, which is most of everything that they did. It's, we have to do this or God isn't going to bless us or God is going to do whatever they think God's going to do.
Yep.
But my oldest daughter, who followed in the footsteps of my wife and was very legalistic and very energetic in her legalism, ensuring that everyone around her followed the law, has done a 180. And she now is a professional photographer with friendships with non-believers all over the world that follow her blog. And they know that she loves the Lord. They know that she loves them. And it's amazing how they are seeking that relationship, getting on airplanes and flying out here just to spend time with her.
Wow.
That wouldn't have happened 5 years ago.
Isn't that great?
10 years ago.
Yeah, I love when that stuff happens. Some of your kids were prodigals. In fact, I tell the prodigal son story a lot. It's one of my favorites because I really think it's about a father, not a son. But it gets into the story of this father who welcomes his son home with the party. And I say to people, do you know the person, first of all, dumb enough to give their kids an inheritance that they don't deserve and aren't ready for? And how many fathers even make that choice? And how many fathers actually throw a party for their son when they get back? And I've heard two stories. One was from a man whose son was a crack addict, and he felt like God had impressed on him to go give his son his share of the inheritance. And the father obviously thought, this is stupid. My kid's holed up in a crack home. I just give him money. He's going to use it and snort it up his nose. And, you know, I'll never see him again. It'll kill him. But he finally felt impressed enough to go and do it. And he liquidated enough of his assets to give his son his share of what the inheritance would be. And he actually found him in this crack house. And the son recoils when his dad walks in, terribly afraid what his dad's going to do to him, and actually just walks in and says, son, I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to give you something. I don't think you're going to live long enough to see your inheritance, so I want to give it to you now. And he gave him a savings account passbook that had half of his net worth in it because he had two sons. And the kid was just overwhelmed with that love and ended up getting into rehab, using that money to get a career. You know, he went a whole wonderful direction with that. And I said, I've only heard one story like that. And the other story I've heard of someone actually throwing a party. You had a prodigal kid kind of wander away for a season. And when he was brought back to your awareness, as if I remember right, you wrote me an email and said you guys threw a party at 1 o'clock in the morning for a son coming home again.
Oh, yeah.
Did you want to talk about that at all? I think that's a great story.
My almost 18-year-old son, been 10 years ago now, 12, disappeared. And we had no idea where he was, what he was doing. The family gathered around and spent basically a week in the front room just crying. And, Lord, where is he? After a couple of months, a ticket came in the mail. Fred, he'd gotten cited in Virginia for speeding.
Because he'd taken your car and run off, right?
He'd gone off with some friends from his work. And there were some drugs involved. Didn't get real heavy, but heavy enough to keep him stupid.
Yeah,
he was gone for 3 months, and the police called at 1 o'clock in the morning and said, "We have your son. You want him back?" And I said, "Yes, bring him now." And by the time he got here, all of his brothers and sisters—there's five of them—were here waiting for him. And we'd already decided we don't care what condition he comes back in, so long as he comes back, and we don't care who he drags with them, or how many tattoos they've got, or whatever else. We're going to love them as they are.
And so you had this big party.
We had a whale of a party. And,
what did it do to him? What did he feel when he walked in the door?
He was afraid I was going to beat the snot out of him.
But when he saw it was a party, how did he, what did that do to him?
I don't know that he knew how to relate to that. It took him a while to actually believe it. He moved back in. It took him a while to find his feet. But the end of that story is he's got his first job as a nurse's assistant last week.
Wow.
And he's working on a nursing degree. And he is wonderful at it.
Wow. And he's found some life and freedom from whatever else he was part of for a time.
Oh, yeah. Yes. He married a sweet little girl that is very encouraging to him. She may be going blind.
Wow.
Probably will be. And he had a little episode with her where he couldn't help her physically and decided, I'm going to become a nurse. So no matter what happens to her, I can take care of her.
Wow. That's a pretty cool story.
Yeah. He's a pretty remarkable young man. And I am so grateful that we made the choices to love him no matter what happened, because that allowed him to come back.
Yeah. How many kids do you have? You have a bunch.
Five.
Yeah. Okay. And they're all kind of in various stages of sorting out this journey, eh?
They're all moving down the journey.
So they've seen their dad change a bit and their mom. And has that had impact in their lives, watching you move from being this pastor guy to being so different or not?
Yeah, I think it's having somewhat of an impact, because what I'm seeing in their relationships, my wife is still on the wouldn't it be nice if the church was full?
Yeah.
And my attitude is, I'm not concerned if the church is full. I want to know what my kids are doing when they're not here. Because I'm encouraging them, if you have something that the Lord lays on your heart that's better to do. And what I see them doing is redeeming their friends that have religious backgrounds and walking with them and setting them free from the religion part of it. And they're ministering to people right and left, wherever they are. And all five of the children in whatever groups that they're in are the the leaders, when people have spiritual problems, they come to those kids, and not because of the pastor's kids. It's because of their walk and their ability to meet the person where they are. And that's what I celebrate.
Yeah, that's got to be very rewarding as a dad, watching it happen.
It is.
Yeah.
It is, and just even staying in one place for 25 years, it was 17 years ago. I was suspecting that one of the 14-year-olds in my church was being molested. Couldn't prove it. She came and just collapsed on my bed with my daughter and told me the story. And, of course, I called the police, and that started a horrific story.
Wow.
But now what do we do with a girl that's been molested by her stepdad for years? We know where that typically goes. And it went where it was going. By the time she was just about 16, she was pregnant with a little girl.
Wow.
And we said, well, we're going to love you, and we are going to take care of you, and we're going to help you through this. So, you know, that her daughter is now 17, still in our fellowship, and she wants to be a music teacher. So she has been installed as the leader of the music, such as we have it. And the people who were her age 17 years ago have been waiting all this time for her to grow up to take over. There is no way I can go to church on Sunday morning and realize what could have been and what is, and watching her blossom as a beautiful young woman, because we decided we're going to love you where you are, and we're sorry about the past. But it is an incredible story of redemption every time I see it. And her mom sits in the back and just smiles every Sunday morning, wow, along with her dad, who loves her deeply.
Yeah. Wow. That's great stuff. Now, I get this email a lot from pastors or staff people, elders, whatever, in various congregational formats of things. And they're saying, you know, is it possible to turn a church around? Is it possible to take, and by church, we don't mean the church. We just mean a traditional congregation. But my answer to that's probably different than yours. I'd be curious what your answer is to that. If somebody says, is it possible to turn a group of people around from something that's more legalistic, conformity-based, stuck on services and programs, and have them embrace a more relational life in God and with each other and with the world? How would you answer an email like that?
Absolutely, it's possible. But you're going to have to kill that beast first. And that means you're going to have to probably really consider all of your programming and consider stopping the programming and letting the Holy Spirit call into being what He wants to have. I stopped all of our external programming years ago. I stopped the nursery. We stopped everything. And we said, if the Lord leads you to do something, take care of the children on a Sunday morning or whatever, then do that. And slowly everything came back to a level that you would not call a church. You know, our Sunday morning, we supposedly start at 10:15. People start getting there at 10. We might all get into the building by 10:45 because everybody's outside and they're relating, but sometimes they'll stay outside and they'll come and say, we didn't get to the sermon today. I said, but I saw you ministering to a sister that was in need. I mean, she needed you, your ear and your heart more than she needed to hear what I had to say. So you have to look at, it's not going to look anything like a traditional church anymore. And it's not going to run like a traditional church.
Now, you're talking about giving them, sorry, go ahead. Finish what you thought was.
Well, it's going to be very much, what did the Lord ask you to do, and is that what you're doing? And so a lot of things will fall by the wayside, but other things that are equally as beautiful will grow up. But the leadership will have no control, which is maybe a little hard for some leaders. I have given up any hope or thought or desire for controlling anything. I trust that the Lord knows what He's going to do and how He's going to do it.
And it's important to find people who will, at least the leaders who don't need to control it and will walk that way with you. But like you said, you waited 25 years for some of those to go away. This wasn't the bull in the china shop 25 years ago forcing what you wanted to have happen among this group of people, was it?
No, it wasn't. The people that are still there are people that I led to the Lord 25, 30 years ago and had been there and knew what the plan was all along and just decided that they would stay and minister there. And it is more like a very large extended family than it is a church.
I think that's what church is meant to be. It's supposed to be an extended family of people who love each other, and we've turned it into corporate jungles of all kinds of other things, particularly following the rules and conformity-based stuff. Well, you're talking about giving the building away to this other group. Do you see a time when this group's not going to orbit around a building or not?
The Lord hasn't told me exactly what's going to happen on that yet, but I suspect that will happen.
Do you have other people listening in with you? Talk about the Lord hasn't told me yet. Are there other people listening in with you on that, or is that pretty much?
There's a group of guys that are listening. I'm, by 30 years, the senior in this group.
Yeah.
And they're kind of relying on me to know what we're going to do.
Are there some gals listening in that too, or are they mostly guys?
No, it's husbands and wives.
Okay. But mostly everybody's looking to you at this point to kind of set the direction, or?
Right. And I'm not setting a direction on it because I don't have all the answers. I'm content to do what the Lord has called me to do today, and tomorrow will be tomorrow.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow.
Great.
And I don't worry about tomorrow.
I love that. Yeah, I think the only way to walk this journey is you've got to become really content to live in the moment and really trust that God's going to do what God needs to do up the road and not have all that in your head, because then you really can't embrace what's happening in the moment. And I find almost everybody on this journey, whether they stay part of a congregation they've been a part of, whether they find themselves outside of it and doing something else, it's somehow innate to the human spirit is, I want to get all the uncertainty out of my life, which I think that's a Don Quixote kind of agenda, because you're never going to do it. It's the illusion of uncertainty, I think, we try and deal with. But I think faith and trust in a loving Father allows you to live at peace with uncertainty. And to me, that's the greater good in this journey. I don't think Sarah and I have anything that guarantees what next year is going to look like for us, but we're content to live in this moment and let God lead us as he desires into the next phase whenever that's ready.
So. That's what we're trying to encourage the younger ones to understand. And I think if I stop doing what I'm doing tomorrow, or stopped doing it, never did it again, it wouldn't create a ripple in their relationships with each other. It would go on exactly the same because they're with each other all the time doing everything and ministering.
That's great. Yeah, it's great to hear. Well, we're coming to the end of this. This is probably one of the more selfish podcasts I've done. You've given me email over the last 5 years, if it's been that long, kind of looking over your shoulder once every, 6-8 months. It's not that frequent, but I get an email now and then. I look over your shoulder at something going on, and I prayed a lot for you, and I just thought, it'd be fun to have a conversation with you and really hear this story fleshed out some, and I just decided it'd be fun to record it and see if other people would enjoy the conversation as well, but I've enjoyed it immensely. Is there anything we've left out, Don, that you'd want to throw in at this point?
No, I'm content with whatever the Lord brings about.
Well, it's been a Skype call, so the audio is not always that, and there's been some little bugs and mosquitoes, the Skype mosquitoes, as we call them, kind of in the background of the sound. So people have to ignore those elements, but I really want to thank you for coming on and sharing your journey with me and with whoever decides they want to listen to this and be benefited as well, because I think it's encouraging for people. There's a whole lot of things God can ask us to do, and there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to anything, how we deal with the church, the congregations, our status in it, being a pastor, whatever, but allowing God to lead us, following it, and watching how that impacts people around us. And if it's put them more in love with Jesus and freer to follow him, I think that's ultimately the best that he's looking for.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you helped me with was, I don't have an agenda for you. That's Father's call, not mine. So I don't have a need to move you from point A to point B. The Lord will lead you where he needs. And I'm discovering more and more every day. One of the podcasts that I sent to you, or the questions I sent to you, is I have a grandson that is 8 years old that was born at 2 pounds when my daughter adopted him. He should not be alive, but he is one of the spectrums of all autism called with Asperger's. And we were wondering, how do you explain to a child like this the love of Jesus? And he volunteered a couple of weeks ago. I love God. We have a personal relationship.
Wow.
And some of my other grandkids, my 8-year-old granddaughter, her salvation prayer was, Jesus, welcome to my life.
Hmm.
It doesn't get any better than that.
No, for sure.
And it answered the questions.
Yeah, to live this out in the reality of our lives with people that we love and care about. And then I love the what I hear running through your whole family, the engagement with people in the world, the excitement to just be with them and see where the conversation goes rather than control it the way I would want. I think letting people around us go in terms of not having, I know when you wrote me a lot, it was simply, man, I want to be your cheerleader. I want to be around and saying, yeah, go for it. Follow what God's doing. But I didn't have answers for the things you were doing. I just knew that God would. And it's been fun to watch him be faithful to you and watch what's happened in your life. So
I appreciate that. And I will keep you posted from time to time.
I figure you will. We may do this conversation again, depending on if other people have some interest in pursuing this conversation with you. It'd be fun to see where that goes. But I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed filling in some of the story for me and appreciate how openly you've come to live your life and how much impact you're having on people. It's awesome.
Well, it's not traditional by any stretch, but my heart is more content. One of the old ones that left the church years ago came back and a few weeks ago and said, well, are you happy? I said, honestly, I'm happier than I've ever been.
Wow.
There are no more Pollyanna Sundays.
Yeah. And I find that so often with people who've gone through, you know, great struggle, dark moments, whatever, to go through this transition. No one, no matter how much pain they've been through, ever regrets finding their way into a different place with Father. And for a lot of people, that does come through a lot of pain and risk. And it doesn't have to. It just seems to. And when it does, it's okay, because God's big enough to take us through that to something more real. So,
absolutely.
Appreciate you, brother. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hopefully we'll get to sit down at a table sometime. I know I met you very briefly at one point, but I keep hoping for the day God lets us sit down at a table and have some really good fellowship together.
I'll look forward to that day.
On the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.